Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Sakhile Ndlovu, the Investor Relations Officer for SEPAKU Holdings. Welcome to our financial results presentation for the period ended 31 March 2016. During the presentation, we're going to start off with Mark, the Chairperson of the Investor Analyst Society. He's going to give us our opening remarks, and the presentation will be done by Dr. Lila Makhuba, the Chief Executive Officer, and Neil Crawford-Lazarus, our Financial Director. They'll later on be joined by Peter Fourie, who's also sitting up front here. He's our Chief Executive Officer for Dangote Cement South Africa, which you all know as SEPAKU Cement. I just want to remind you that soon after the presentation, we'll have a question and answer session. We'll request, please, that you give us your name and the company you represent. After the presentation, we'll have an opportunity for you to mingle and chat to management and ask further questions. Those that have parking tickets, please don't forget to hand them over to me at the end, and we can swap them over for paid tickets. I would also like to welcome those that have joined us through the webcast, and I trust they're live already. Okay. Mark, please come through.
Thank you very much, Sakhile, for that. Just a quick word from me. A big word of thanks on behalf of us all today. It's a nice turnout to Lila, Peter, Neil, and the team. It's quite a remarkable 2 years that SEPAKU has in fact had, and it's now a fully fledged cement player with impressive plant and equipment. Interesting to note that the combined revenue this last year from their two main operating entities exceeded 3.2 billion rand, so no mean feat. Presentations such as this are a terrific opportunity for us to interact with management, and we thank them for that. They've typically been very good with their actual financial disclosure, and we thank them for that too. Lila, over to you. Appreciate that.
Thank you very much, Mark, for your kind introduction, and thank you very much for the A-team that's here with me. Just in case someone wants to attack me, I got serious backup on my right-hand side. I'll be doing the operation performance review for the financial year ended 31st March, and Neil will do the financial performance, and we will then do the questions and answer session after that. We're very pleased to tell the market that we have done very well under very trying conditions. We have been able to achieve the revenue that's almost more than double what we reported last year. We've reached steady state capacity utilization of 80% for about a year now, since May 2015. And that's a combination of Ahanang plant operating at 70% and the Delmas plant operating at 90% utilization. Our sales volume has increased almost more than double as well to 162% for the 12 months ending December 2015. And we've also significantly retained our market share in KZN, where the imports largely impacted the volumes. We've also, during the year, noticed that the imports were largely reduced due to the imposition of tariffs in KZN. And our revenue has increased, as I already said, from 919 to 2.3 billion, in spite of the difficult competitive forces that we've been dealing with. And our EBITDA for the 12-month period was at 22% compared to 14% last year. We, as we've announced last year, that the moment we hit our steady state, the biggest next focus is going to be optimization. That process has now begun, and we have been in the middle of it as we speak. We have been able to, just by optimizing raw material composition, we've been able to increase capacity back to 2.8 million tons. That just means we are producing at much lower revs. Even if we're not producing the 2.8 million tons, we're producing less than that, but at much lower revs, more efficiently. We are continuously implementing this optimization process, and we are hopeful to see results in the near future. we are aiming at improving EBITDA by all these multiple optimization processes by margins between 5 and 7, and that will enhance our results very, very significantly. What we are looking at as far as optimization is concerned is logistics. We rationalize those, and we also renegotiate with the transporters the rates, which will be significantly different from the time we started because the business is now more stable and the risks are less. The sales team has been reorganized to look at the different segments of the market, because the market is no longer what it used to be in the past, where there was just one market trend or one blanket fits all. The market is different, it's segmented, and the sales team has been really focusing on customizing each section of the market or each segment of the market. The raw materials are also being, we're also improving that. We're improving the sourcing as well. As I said earlier, we're optimizing the raw material composition, but we're also improving the sourcing of those, just making sure that all the additives are also efficiently sourced. And we're also mastering the production processes and improving and output. I've said earlier that just by optimizing raw materials, we've been able to produce with the same plant, same everything else, from 2.5 to 2.8. Those results will be showing in the near future. We still see the market as demanding 13.8 million tons of cement per annum, with potential growth. We've seen a 3.2 year-on-year demand growth, including imports in 2015. And the market is, as we have already said in our previous encounter with the market, that the bias is more towards bags. The demand is in more towards bags, and it's more highly in rural areas. The bulk has been showing a bit of pressure, unless you live in Sandton. It doesn't look like that, because there's a crane every square mile you go. But the rest of the country, bulk demand has gone significantly down. Out in province is still very robust, which is where we are participating. And fortunately for us, in Gauteng, there is a share of the market that we cannot lose, because we've got an uncle in the red mix business called Metia. So Metia is responsible for a significant share of the Gauteng market. We've seen a new entrant of a new cement player introducing about 1 million tons of capacity, starting to produce in January 2016. They are probably just ramping up towards that level now. And the impact will obviously was very muted by the fact that they have a supply contract with one of the major retailers, whom we also use. Their plant is more predominantly bulk cement production, which is likely to cause more pressure in that area, in the bulk market. We have seen the evolution of imports over the last year being a very interesting development. The volumes have declined significantly. If you look at the annual inputs by origin, the white is Pakistani and the red is Chinese. And the orange is Chinese and the red is other. You can see in 2014 that the maximum input came into the country. And the final tariff imposition against the Pakistani cement came in 2015, and from there it came right down to what we saw in 2016, which is very, very minimal. As we speak, there is very little importation of even Chinese in the coast, as we have been reported to. This is just an indication of the monthly, also by origin. Pakistani cement, you can see what's been going on there from last year to this year. That's what they brought into the country. And this is what they brought in January this year. And from here, it's just Chinese coming into the market. The final tariffs, as I've said, were by ITEC, were imposed in December 2015. And from there, we've just been seeing a downward trend. We have been able to continue to supply in that market, where the imports were playing a significant role, especially in KZN. As far as the positioning is concerned, we are still very well positioned in the rural bag market. Approximately 65% of our sales volumes go into that area. And we have taken a massive effort in making certain that our relationships with the retailers and distribution channels has been re-established and solidified. We have got a significant share of Gauteng bulk market. As I said earlier, this market we're not likely to lose because we've got an uncle in that business called Meteor, who is a subsidiary of the holdings company. The marketing team has been spending time, as I've said earlier already, that they've been spending quite a bit of time understanding the dynamics in the market segmentation, and they've been dealing with those differences appropriately, and we've retained those sales. We have, in February this year, put in the cement division price increases between 4 and 9%. And it's very interesting how that evolved. And needless to say, in a nutshell, most of them did not stick. Neil will be unpacking that to a very significant length, but I think for now I'd leave it at that. Meteor has recorded a revenue increase as well from 7.75 last year to 8.74, an increase of 13%. The growth in the sales volumes is mainly due to the additional plant we reported last year. It came into operation, the 11th plant, which is in Gauteng, and also the pumping services division. We started the year in Meteor with a very strong order book, and that we've been having very positive signals as we looked at the number of building plans passed. The number there has been quite significant. We have experienced, like everybody else in the business, intense competition, especially in terms of pricing and margins. We've been operating at much less than we wanted to. We've just come down from 14 to 12. We have completed our operational offices in Gauteng, which is based in Midrand, and that has a fully equipped laboratory services and also a truck service station. And that reduces our testing cost by about 10% and just ensures that there's reliability of services and also consistency of what we do. It has also increased our R&D capabilities because we used to outsource these services before. Right now we do them all in-house. We have, in Meteor, also strengthened the team by increasing the ready-mix experience by about 24 years of experience by appointing Jürgen Sitoy, who has been in the industry for quite a long time. And together with Kenneth, the experience in ready-mix is just ballooned. Kenneth has moved to become CEO of the group and also business development director for the holdings company so that he can assist with the strategy that we are trying to implement in holdings that is affecting growth. We have, because of these massive skills in the ready-mix business and the technical abilities, we are now embarking on various expansion opportunities that are becoming available to us, and the team is quite capable to approach most of those. We will be reporting in the next session, but I'd like Neil to take it from here and give you a financial performance overview. Neil, over to you.
Thank you, Lula. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. The group results were overall better. Not sure whether it was as expected, but it was better. And I'd like to take you through what that meant in numbers for us. We saw a 42% increase in the operating profit. That looks like a substantial amount, and that's mainly because last year, you will recall, we had the final settlement of the Meteor shareholders payment. It came through as an IFRS adjustment of 28 million rand through the operating cost line. So of that increase from 59 to 84, there's 28 million there that's not repeated as a cost that was shown last year. The basic earnings increased by 22.8%. Went from 24 cents to 30 cents. HEPS stayed exactly at the same, similar levels, 24 to 29.8 cents, which means that our net earnings increased by 28% from 47 million to 60 million. Again, if we're looking at the two normalized items that affected last year's result, it was that 28 million loss that was included in that 47, but there was also a profit on the cement side of the tax adjustment of 12i. It was 154 million in cement and had a 36 million impact on ours all. So the normalized comparison would be 20 million to 60 million, or a 10 cents to a 30 cents improvement, therefore, of EPS. Looking at the two individual operations, as Lalau's already said, Meteor's turnover increased from 775 million to 874, 100 million increase in turnover. But due to pricing pressure, that was volume related and not necessarily price related, the EBIT margin was lower to 12% rather than the 14% that we achieved in the previous period. Cement continued to gain market share. We saw a nearly full year of production for that period. We had the commissioning finalized during the first quarter. We saw the kiln downtime for that six-month period. So hit steady state in May and had a good 7 months after that with the results getting the best results for the third quarter when we had turnover of 650 million during that period and an EBITDA of 26%. The fourth quarter eased a little bit again, as one would normally expect. You always have your second kiln stoppage for a two-week period, and you also have the builder's holiday, which has an impact on your turnover for December. I think this slide, really in a couple of lines, explains the whole situation of what has happened during the year. The group turnover and the Meteor turnover is, of course, again the same. Cement being a associate. So we see the 100 million increase in turnover there. On the cost of sales line, there was an increase of 90 million. So the extra, there's only a 10 million gain by the increase in the turnover, which is not representative of the margins obtained previously. And that 10 million then is reflected in the gross profit, where we have a 350 versus a 340. Operating expenses showed a reduction, and I've already touched on that. That is a 28 million rand that's not there again. So in essence, if you neutralize that, you're looking at the 10 million increase. Once you've adjusted that and you're looking at the increase in operating expenses, it would have increased by 6.8%. In total, compared to, or in, and bearing in mind that we had the increase in volumes, the 6.8% is therefore a very tight controlling of cost during the period. Increased volumes, but a cost in total increasing by only 6.8%. The equity accounted investment of cement shows 18 million as opposed to the 36 million from the previous year. It's also something that I've already touched on. If you're looking at the pre-tax numbers, cement had a pre-tax number the total cement contribution was 50 million, of which our 36% was there for 18. And for the previous year, it would have been 100 million or 99 million. That 99 million last year consisted of a loss of 52 million rand and then a tax adjustment, the I-12 tax adjustment of 154. So the 99 million rand profit before tax or after tax left us with reporting that amount last year for our 36%. That then brings us to the amount that we've already spoken about, the 60 million, as opposed to the 47 of last year, really a normalised comparison from 20 being purely the growth in cement that's been in the operations for the full period and had a strong second six-month period that they reported on. As I have alluded to, cement really had a year of two halves. The first half, we reached the steady state, but not without the kiln stoppage during the last 2 weeks of March and the first 3 weeks of April. That impacted both on production and, of course, then additional overage being carried during that period. The second half started, as Lalau also alluded to, the focus on the optimization program results, which we've been seeing coming through already in the new year. Cost of sales improved 79% to 77% on a comparative basis, and resulting in an improvement of 9% to the gross profit margin to 22.4%. That 22.4%, again, as I've mentioned, it was a little bit up and down during the year, starting with an 18% in the first quarter, hitting a 26% in the third quarter, averaging a 22% for the year. But giving a good base to start the current year and improve through the optimization program to get that between a target at between 25% and 30% at the end or during this period. And I will come back to the effect of pricing on that and how we're progressing on a question that is asked fairly regularly with regard to the EBIT margin that received a lot of prominence in the start in the period that we were building the plant and before startup. The biggest jump, of course, on the cement side is the last line, the interest, 135% jump to 265 million, as opposed to the 112 million. I mean, that is purely a function of the fact that we were running a fully commissioned plant at that stage. During 2014, we brought the first plant in January, so the Delmos plant, 600 million, were carrying interest for the whole year. The Killen came in August, so you only had 5 months of interest on the Killen cost, and the second plant in Nagenang came in September, October, so we only had a quarter of interest that went through the income statement during that year. I mean, interest was accrued on those expenses, but it was capitalized to the project, and that's the reason for 2015 showing a full year of carrying interest on the full cost of production and the full bank debt. Statement of the financial position. Very little movement there, and all as can be expected from the results that we've just discussed. If you're looking at the non-current assets, the 20 odd million that was increased there, it's really, Lalau mentioned the laboratory as well as the workshop and the offices in Midrand. That's 15 million of the 20, and then there was on the vehicle side replacement of a number of the transport vehicles after a three-year cycle. You normally have your first substantial cost, so there was a 30 million spent on maintenance capex during that period on the Metair side. Current assets, the increase of from 204 to 207, that is 20 million cash that was generated from the operations, and we'll come back to the cash flow statement on the next slide. And then the equity increase, the 84 to 910, is basically the 16 earnings that we reported on, plus a very small amount of 400,000 rand that was collected on options that was exercised during the period. Not a lot of options exercised during this period. And then with regard to the liabilities, the reduction of some 15 million there is mainly repayment of on the non-current liabilities, the acquisition debt, the repayment of that of 23 million that would be reflected during the current year. Statement of cash flow. We started the year with 71 million rand and ended the year with 91 million rand, a growth of cash, and 20 million rand. 78 million came from operations, and we spent on the office as well as the vehicle maintenance, as I referred to, 35 million rand. 23 million rand was spent on the repayment of the debt. There was also movement that we pointed out on the movement in the balance sheet. So that brought us to the 91. The movement in cash for the previous year looked a little bit bigger. It looks like there was a 45 million rand jump there, but that was due to a facility that was available for the expansion of Metair that we needed to draw down on before that year end, and that was really the reason that there was cash coming in, and that's the 20. That's why previous year you had a zero on movement of facilities, but whilst we still paid back debt during that period, there was also a drawdown on a facility to have the funds available for expansion on the Metair side, and that's really why we saw the bigger jump in cash for that period. So we're looking at a 20 million rand increase in the group, meaning Holdings and Metair for the current year, for the last year, and anticipate that the current year would probably just do slightly better, but also in the vicinity of 20, 25, 30 million rand. Added to that, which would leave the group with about 110 to 120 million available in cash. Why are we talking about that? So we're going to move towards the cement position, the pricing over the last 18 months. I think it's the question has always been, do you talk about the elephant in the room or is there a snake in the grass? And I think it's time to just show what has happened. We've also heard at more than one occasion that Sephaku entered the market and favoured volume to price. This is the last 18 months, so it does not show the price effect during 2014, which also was fairly flat, and that's really what we anticipated when we entered the market. We always said that we would not enter the market with the view of a price war, but that we expect prices to remain flat in the first year, which it did. What happened in the second year? In February, we pushed up prices and immediately saw that the market did not really respond, and you were easily losing volume for that, and those increases were lost and really wiped out by June, July. In August, we pushed it up again, and the same thing happened to the extent that in December, we were back at the January prices. In February, we announced that we would increase prices and just saw that nothing else was happening and we could not implement those, and then saw a further slippage in the last 3 months of another 1%. The graph that is not on the screen is actually how this weighted average price looks like when you actually use the different regions. The big competitive region, Gauteng, in which we are ourselves, would have a line that moves from that 100 to a 92, 93. And the more rural markets could be as high as 111. It's unfortunate, of course, that the one with the smaller transport element is therefore the lower price, and the one with the higher price is the one that needs to be transported quite some distance for one to reach that. But that all plays to the position where we are with pricing at the moment. And that leads me to deviate just slightly again from the presentation to the other question that I always get asked, and that is, when do we reach the 35% EBITDA that was mentioned and thrown around when we're at the stage of producing or building the plant? Just to take a ballpark number that has been bandied around, I think the cement price just before we started getting into the market was about 1,200 rand a ton at that time, and I see a couple of nods of agreement, so it must be more or less there. We've been speaking about a steady state of 80% of capacity, which if you have a 2.5 million ton plant, you're talking about 2 million tons. So let's just take 2 million tons at 1,200 rand, and we say we've got a 2.4 billion rand income. If you're looking for a margin of 35%, your cost will be 65% of that. That will be 560 million rand would be your cost to achieve the 35% EBITDA. If you then look at the last 2 years and you apply your cost inflation of 6% to that, your cost would go to 1.75 billion rand. And if you bear in mind that you're operating at 95% maybe of that 1,200, your EBITDA will be sitting at 23.2%. So that if you are doing a 25 or a 26, you are actually doing better than what you anticipated when building the plant, construction the plant, based on the pricing levels that we are seeing today. And therefore, pricing must be one of the main objectives of improving going forward if you're looking at your short-term goals. Why the moment of this? Because I need to share with you what the impact of this is also on cement, and what does that do to cement's debt covenants, I think. Something that we need to just quickly address. I think doing the numbers yourself, 23-25% EBITDA does put strain on the covenants, and The shareholders has decided that we will alleviate that problem or try and relieve some of that pressure by putting additional 130 million rand as a debt payment into the cement operations. That would mean that 47 million would come from ourselves to represent our 36%, but that will be made from the contribution. That contribution will be made from cash. It's not a matter that we will raise equity to service debt. That's the other reason why I just briefly spent some time on the cash flow statement to tell you also where our cash position is. The cash position caters for the expansion of additional Metair plant and the normal operations and running the head office, plus addressing this debt or making this contribution towards the debt, which we feel would be sufficient to address the covenants in the current year. These covenants, of course, becomes easier year on year as you do the repayment. 340 million will be paid off the capital amount this year, so every time that brings down the interest rate and makes the covenants easier to achieve, but still leaves us with the priority to really address the issue of pricing and getting that EBITDA ratios to levels that we are comfortable with. Medium-term focus, apart from that, and I think you will see it in the... I haven't started the slide with the EVIA prices in all markets, but started with the holding company. We will continue to look at growth opportunities. I think in the current market, there will be opportunities to look at mergers, acquisitions, backward integration, downstream opportunities, and we will continue to evaluate it. The main focus would always be to add shareholder value. And to date, our biggest shareholder value addition has always been to expand the Metair operations. Those returns have just been better than what was available on mergers and acquisition opportunities, and we will be adding a new plant, the 12th in the group and the 5th in Gauteng in Metair this year. We've actually wanted to start with that already, but the red tape in water and electricity is always a little bit longer than what one are willing to wait for, but it is something that we think we will get on to site very shortly. So that as far as the holdings, medium focus is concerned on cement itself. I think Peter will also be able to elaborate on that during question time, but it is to pursue the optimization, to increase the sales focus, ensure efficient, optimized logistics, increase the production efficiencies. I think we're seeing that coming through very well. The question... or Lalau made the point of the increase of the facility or the capacity from a 2.5 to the 2.8. Of course, we're not selling 2.8, but the fact is that the reverse is true. You know, you can produce the 2 million or the 2.1 or whatever you're producing at a more efficient cost, having put this in place and having made these tweaks to the plant. The aim is definitely to maintain or grow the market share, specifically in the same ratio than what the cement demand would grow, and then to achieve higher prices in all markets. And I think we're seeing that is happening. We really expect on a broad base to see higher prices during July. It looks like it's in the market, and we would be following it closely and hope that it holds. I think it needs to hold generally for in the cement industry at the moment. There's a couple of debt commitments out there that needs to be serviced, and I think we're not concerned after making the contribution that we've referred to for ourselves. On the Metair side, I think I've already talked about the 12th plant, and the short-term strategy is still to continue with cost controls and focus on service excellence. Again, as I said, when you're looking at that cost of production of the company, Metair has contained cost well, 6.8%, including the growth in volume. So that was a very good result for us. Ladies and gentlemen, that concludes what I have to say with regards to the presentation, and the team will now take questions if there's any, which was leading that. Thank you very much.
Mark Tomorris of SBG Securities. Under a scenario, let's assume that cement prices for another 12 months couldn't move up by that much. How much margin expansion can the market expect in the cement operations from the operational improvements?
Yeah, I think if you go, I'm not sure whether Peter can follow, but I think when we were talking to the 5 to 7% improvement of margin on efficiencies, that was probably looking at our forecast, saying this is where we will end. So that would assume an adjustment of the pricing as well. You need to do a back calculation to say, you know, what are your view of the price if 6% half year through holds, and you get a 5 to 7% improvement in margin. If only 3% holds, or whatever the case may be, there's many iterations that one can run. And I think again, we've seen in the past that the increases previously has held in the rural areas and not necessarily in the Gauteng area. And we anticipate it to be different this year, but only time will tell.
Yes, I think just. From my side, the assumptions on the improvements and the percentages on margin that we disclosed there is based on cost improvements. So none of those improvements were based on top-line improvements. If you look at our last half of last year's margins, they were achieved at the sort of pricing levels where we are sitting at the moment. So you would still then, in the second half of this year, if there were not to be any changes in price levels where we are at the moment, we would certainly still expect those benefits on margin to come through from what we were at in the second half of last year. We have not seen major price increases in costs for this year, but you know, I think the biggest question is what fuel is going to do. So I think the only cost pressure that can come onto those margins would be coming from fuel adjustments for the second half of the year. And I think that's anybody's guess what that will do. But on the other cost increases, we have put through or agreed on our salary increases. And other than that, we have got compensating efficiencies coming down. So we don't see major changes from our previous prediction.
Could you just give us a sense of what the pricing has done in the bulk market in terms of Gauteng versus rural? And do you have that type of information?
We do have the information, but we are sensitive to disclosing it. And that's really from a commercial point of view, because all our bulk is substantially in Gauteng. If we disclose the specifics, that would become... we see it as commercially confidential information, but what I can tell you is it has been coming down, but off a higher base. So if you look at the last 6 months, it came down in the region of 5%, and that would be, I think, the most I would like to say at this point in time. But it has been under more pressure, firstly because it was in Gauteng, secondly because the new entrant focused mainly on bulk market. Well, they had bag, but that didn't affect the pricing levels of bag that much. And that's really where the pressure on the bulk prices have come from.
Can we maybe discuss a little bit about the pricing on KZN market? I mean, I see 20% of your volumes is moving to that direction. But you also got a lot of imports from China in the KZN market. How's that market performing at this particular stage and the pricing as well?
The market is performing much better than we expected. When we entered the market, it was on a strategic basis of defending against Pakistan dumped cement. We didn't want them to come up into the inland region, so we defended that with some fierce pricing right down to where they came in. If you look at the Chinese cement that's come in the first quarter, only 17,000 tons came into, I think it's right, Sakili, 17 or 20?
Yeah,
17,000 tons into KZN. The balance went to PE and Cape Town. So Chinese cement in KZN at the moment is very little and at prices that are probably 2 rand a bag below us, where if you go back a year, those prices were 7 and 8 rand a bag below us. So especially in the inland areas or the northern areas of KZN, we have managed to put through price increases February last year, August last year, February this year, and it all of them held. So we certainly don't see it as a subsidized market anymore. Yes, we are still competing against imports, but in a very small area, mainly in the Durban-Pietermaritzburg area. For the rest of the areas, they're comparing to some margins in our other lowest margin areas.
Hi, it's Andrew Moses here. Just back to KwaZulu-Natal. There's been a huge drop-off in imports into Durban in particular. What happened to all that distribution equipment and the facilities that were handling that? You know, is it still there if someone wants to switch on volumes tomorrow, or is it getting taken out of the market and permanently shifted somewhere else?
I don't know. Sorry, I haven't looked at it.
Hi, Peter, can you give us a bit more detail around, you know, you've given some sort of broad comments around how you're going to get margins up 5 to 7%. Could you give us more detail as to, I mean, I'm thinking you've got cost pressure coming through. If one takes a view that selling prices are unlikely to increase significantly, 5 to 7% seems hard to see. Could you give us some more detail as to where you think that's going to come from?
Okay, the majority of it is coming from transport, and we have renegotiated rates, as Dr. Lala has mentioned. 27% of our cost base is transport or distribution. And on those, we have renegotiated rates because now that we fully ramped up or at steady state, we have got a much more steady distribution pattern. We've optimized some of the transport from it, and it's mainly from backhauls on existing transport. If you look at citrus from Limpopo and some other commodities coming, you know, timber from Mpumalanga, going into contracts with transporters where we now have constant volume going in the one direction and they have other constant volume coming in the other direction. That's been quite large, and frankly, in the first year of operation, we were not looking at optimizing costs of logistics. We were looking at servicing customers. So if customers asked for it in Timbuktu, we supplied it to them in Timbuktu. Didn't matter what the cost of transport was. It sounds a bit blasé, but it was just not aimed at the cost of it. It was aimed at the delivery side to it and being able to deliver the next day or the day after that, depending on what the promise was, rather than looking at costs. Our shift getting into the cost side of it now from a distribution map that we're now fairly confident of, that's large savings. If you look at the raw materials, just a alumina source, we imported that at very high costs. It's small in relation to total cost, but it's a substantial part. We imported that just to be double safe, and we didn't use local alternatives because some of the local alternatives are in fact waste products from other activities or processes. We have now tested the local material. We've got confidence. We know what the chemical reaction of that is, and we will replace the imported raw materials with local available waste materials with substantial cost savings. Those are probably the two largest ones. On the smaller side, we are optimizing the use of heat and for drying in our mills. That's been substantial before. Our power costs, just from understanding the plant and operating it at the right time, that's coming down. That's now way below what our guaranteed rates were, just because we know the plant better and because it's running more consistently. So it's in a number of different areas, but raw materials and transport are the two largest ones. That will improve margins, but I specifically avoided commenting on that now because, you know, as you mentioned, you know, let's not assume anything coming from prices at the moment. But if you look at the range that we gave, the improvement range, to get to the top end of it, we'll have to get some price increases in some of the rural specific areas. But there, I think if I can just emphasize what Neil said earlier, if you take January as a base, there are some areas, regions, that we're now sitting at 111, so 11% up from January last year, but some others at 92, so it averages at 97. So we have managed, and it's not just general regions, it's very dynamic. We are increasing prices in certain specific areas on a quarterly basis now, and where we see opportunities, we do it. Rather, and this is where we're focusing on the segments, rather than just announcing general price increases.
It looks like Mamba are already using the strategy you used through Cashbuild to start their bag cement, get their bag cement into the market. To what extent is that displacing you, or is it displacing somebody else at this stage, and what does that mean for you from a margin point of view over time?
It hasn't affected our margins at all. I think Cashbuild's been very responsible in the way that they brought that Mamba product to market, or more specifically through their store on their house brand. In the initial couple of months, we were pushed back in line with what we anticipated, but we recovered some of that. And certainly not on price. There is one of our competitors that's been displaced totally from Cashbuild. And I think that's harmed them more than it's harmed us. We also believe that contract with Cashbuild is probably running very close to what it was signed for. And if you take that together with some other channels into Buildits and a few others, we think Mamba is very close to their bag capacity now. So the pressure is going to come, either they've got to increase their bagging facilities, which will take some time, and then there'll be some more pressure coming from it, or what we are seeing is a lot of pressure in the bulk market, but not a lot of success for them. Bulk users do take longer to move, and the bulk market is very depressed at the moment. So we'll see what the next move is from their side. But from a bag perspective, yes, they did come in with lower rates. Yes, they had the big contract with Cashbuild, and they've ramped up. So they're in now. Fortunately, they're quite small in terms of volumes, not the same impact as when we came in.
Sorry, just getting back to your earlier response in terms of raw material and procurement savings, can you just speak us through how you think about either A, reinvesting those savings into price to drive volumes as opposed to banking the margin? Like how does that play out in your mind?
Now, certainly, we had a at a stage now where margin is more important than volume. We have increased volumes over the last couple of months, but not substantial increases. It's natural increases, and that's what gave us the confidence to put through some price increases in July again. So we certainly don't want to use any of the cost savings to go and chase volumes. We wouldn't mind some natural extra volumes, but at the right price. You know, we're not chasing volumes anymore.
If the South African economy was growing 3 to 5%, you know, the overcapacity would probably be absorbed quite easily. But given the probable outlook, I mean, can South Africa support 5 producers? I mean, surely what's more probable is you need some industry consolidation. Just some thoughts on how you think that could play out. Are there any parties that you think are less committed to South Africa or that are natural parties to do a transaction with? Some thoughts on that?
I would prefer not to go there. But consolidation is always good for any industry. The problem that you do have is that the largest player appears to be the easier target now. Now that will not result in any consolidation because they're too large. I don't believe any competition commission will allow consolidation at that level. If you look at the others that are showing interest, it's just replacing with other international players. I'm not aware of any consolidation that could come from an overseas player.
I think the problem is that your ownership in all of those are large international players that, you know, of which this is a very small portion, and the making sense of putting these two together or any two together locally whilst not doing something international is a total mind shift that is required by those investors. I mean, each of them has got a big daddy who sees himself as a top 10 cement producer and is more concerned about their other markets and entry in their other markets and growth in their other markets than what a consolidation in the South African market would mean to them, I think.
Morning, Janine from Tepe Stockbroking. Could you just give us a little bit of colour on the Meteor order book, given the pressure on the bulk market and the consolidation of the inland ready mix sector, please?
Meteor order book is strong. We've had 3-4 anchor projects that kicked in last year, which was unusual as they normally had about only one. But they're still running 300 to 400 contracts, and the 3-4 does not make up 10% of their total turnover. So these guys are always working on establishing or entering into new contracts for the one to follow the other, and it runs well into the next couple of years on a rolling basis. It's really, I think, and Peter alluded to it, the pressure there is again an indirect result of the bulk, the pressure on the bulk cement. You now have integrated cement producers, ready mix operators that would, if the pressure is on the bulk sales, channel those sales through lower ready mix prices. And that's where you'll see the pressure coming onto Meteor. But with regards to service quality and the technical ability that they have to provide that specific service, they still remain in that in a very good position. And the order book has not shown any signs of weakness at this point in time. It will go through a curve. You might see a June going lower, but then August, July, August picks up immediately after that. That's just the nature of the business.
I think maybe if I can just add to that, because ready mix is such a, I've got such a large number of contracts, building plans approved is normally a good indicator or leading indicator of what you could expect. And certainly the second quarter building plans approved this year gives us a lot of hope that that might start to come out in the areas that Meteor operates. We're also aware of a few very large new projects coming out in the Sandton area and on the M1 corridor that's out to tender at the moment. Now, whether Meteor gets it or not, they're certainly going to have a good go at getting some of it. But even if the opposition gets it and it just takes up some capacity from the opposition side, the indirect impact of that on Meteor would be very positive. So we're not banking it, but there are some better signs on the horizon than we had probably in the last 2 years.
Hi, I'm Dion from Barclays. Just a question on that expansion in Meteor in terms of the 12th plant. What are the timelines on that, and what are the estimated costs, and would that be funded from cash flow within Meteor?
Yes, the timeline is still regulatory approval dependent, but we are really envisaging that we would be able to go on site within the next month or two. You go into operation 3 months after that. The civils is not a big or a long; it's something that takes a long time. So that with regards to timeline, with regards to funding, yes, our cost of erecting a plant is not substantial at all, and is included for in the cash that we currently have on hand.
Just an additional comment on that. I think one thing that we've always said is before we put a plant, we do a market research, and once we decide we're going to put one up, it's when we've established that there will be substantial support for the business for a period between 7 and 8 years. That becomes the criterion. So by the time we go in, we are relatively comfortable that in the next 7-8 years there will be enough work for a plant. So we don't just put one to make the numbers sound right. We've moved from 10 to 11 to 12. But we look at an area, study it properly, and establish that in the next six, seven years, there will be enough to support what we are putting in.
Maybe just a little bit more on the cement debt governance. I mean, obviously the portion you're going to inject is going to be about 47 million. And on a group level, I mean, are you comfortable that enough is going to be injected in this business? And how much time does it actually buy you for, unless there's a real recovery in operational performance?
We're comfortable that it addresses the issues the pressure that could come during the current year and the existing scenario. I think we're not in a position that we are looking at a cash flow constraint to service the debt. These are looking at a debt service covenant ratios and things like that we need to ensure that we keep them in place. Of course, it's not a discussion that we took unilaterally. This was after discussion with the banks, what the banks would require, what they would be happy with, and we were discussing a range. And indications are at the moment we've not concluded the discussions; it's ongoing. But all indications at the moment is that 130 million injection by the two shareholders would be sufficient to address any possible concerns that the credit committee might raise in evaluating the covenants.
Thanks.
We have no additional questions from the webcast.
Well, thank you very much. Since there are no additional questions from the floor and from the webcast, we'd like to thank you very much for attending our results presentation. As I said earlier, we've got some snacks outside and drinks and coffee, and you can have an opportunity to meet with management. Thank you very much.